Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, one and all. Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. My name is Trisha Griffith. I'm co-owner of WebSleuth.com and also own ForumsForJustice.org. Tonight's show is going to be very interesting indeed. Later in the show, we'll be talking to the sister of missing special needs adult Johnny Brown. It's a very sad story. The family is just frantic, and Mr. Brown's family needs our help. And that's what we do best, is help out, right? And we'll get to that in a little while. But first up, tonight's show, I'm telling you, is going to be very memorable. I can guarantee that. But before I say anything else of any substance, let's get the legal goo out of the way. The opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the host, moi, and her fabulous guests. This radio show is not the same as WebSleuth.com LLC, which is a completely different corporate entity. It's also not the same as ForumsForJustice.org. Trisha's True Crime Radio stands alone, on its own, ready to do battle when needed. That sounds like some geeky video game, doesn't it? Tonight's guest, it is a rare person indeed who will stand up to someone they don't know, who will take on a public battle and use their own money to get their point across. Well, tonight we have such a person on Trisha's True Crime Radio. It's Mr. Jeff Ruby. Now, believe it or not, you all know Jeff Ruby, and I'm going to tell you how you know him. Remember back in 2007 when the owner of a restaurant kicked out O.J. Simpson, kicked him out of his establishment, and then barred him from coming back? That was Jeff Ruby, our guest tonight, the man who stood up to OJ. And Mr. Ruby, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. I'm just going to kind of go through a list of things here, and then I'm going to ask you a question to get things going. You refused to serve OJ Simpson. You took out an ad, a large ad, criticizing the Casey Anthony verdict. You barred Hustler magazine owner Larry Flint from your restaurants because he offered Casey Anthony money to pose nude. And recently you took out an ad calling Drew Peterson's attorneys the Three Stooges. That'll be Joel Brodsky, Steve Greenberg, and Joe Lopez. And you also went to the trial of Drew Peterson, sat in the courtroom, got into a staring contest with Drew Peterson, mouthed a few choice words, and you were removed from the courtroom. Now, let me start off with this. You have since apologized to the judge for that, haven't you? Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, I went on TV, and actually I held my own little press conference. It's the first time I asked to be on camera this whole time was to publicly apologize for, causing him problem and, disrupting his courtroom. The court was on recess, by the way. It was in recess. The jury, of course, and the judge was not in there. But that said, I wanted to apologize, for doing that. So I did that, and emphatically did that. I apologized to the judge. I placed some ads where I publicly expressed my opinion of the judge, and I believe that's why I was thrown out of the courtroom. I don't think it had anything to do with Drew Peterson. So I was also apologizing for that without coming out and saying it,
Understood.
And so that was that. The ads of Casey Anthony, there was a number of ads, and the ads for Drew Peterson, there were three ads. One had nothing to do with anything but the judge.
What did that ad say? Because I feel the judge is biased. I think he's biased against the prosecution. What did your ad say?
It was in the Chicago Tribune. It was in the Chicago Sun-Times, and I believe they also own 20 other papers that hit all those other towns like Joliet and all those other surrounding communities or towns or cities or whatever they're called. It just said, has a judge ever been charged with obstruction of justice? That was it. Has a judge ever been charged with obstruction of justice? That was right to the point. And I don't think he liked that.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
And it was the same question when I was on Judge Jeanine Pirro's show. I asked her that question. And I had already placed the ad. I was on her show on a Sunday. The ad was going in on Wednesday. So that was my question. And I also, that was on national TV, I said that. And then, of course, the ad came out. And then I had another ad that talked about Juliet Justice, and that had quite a few things in there. And, that had something about, this is 1990, no, this is a payback for 1992 and blah, blah, blah. Of course, that was the year that Glasgow defeated this judge, the state attorney.
Right, well, they were ran against each other.
Yeah, and so, you know, that certainly gives the appearance of a conflict of interest, and that there could be some acrimony there. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no way this judge should have recused himself. When this guy took your job from you, and you won an election, and now you're going up against him in a court in a murder trial. You know, there ought to be another judge there, you know, hearing this case. Then there were many other, they've had bad chemistry. There's been energy that the Millers had for Glasgow for a while.
Mm-hmm.
There is serious energy there. And I'm not saying, you know, maybe Glasgow did some things. He's, you know, who knows? I'm not saying who's right or wrong. I'm
right.
Just saying these guys don't get along. And it was clear that they should have never been in the same courtroom for this trial.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. And it is clear in that courtroom, and I even was told this one by one of the witnesses who called me before I ever came to Illinois, to Jolly Juliet. Before she saw my ad, she saw the article. I said she didn't read the ad, but there was a story. After I wrote the ad, they interviewed me for a newspaper story.
Mm-hmm.
And she read that, and she was so happy that I took that stand. You know, and you know, if you can't stand up for what you believe in, you shouldn't stand at all. Just stay seated. And
I love that.
I stand up for what I believe in. I refuse to waver from who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw that article, and she wanted to let me know how much the family and the friends and the loved ones of Kathy Savio, how much it meant to them. And she told me in that day or days that she was testifying, you could just see it in the judge's eyes and his face and his anger that he had for Glasgow. And it was just terrible. And I can tell you this. If ever there was a time when the families of two murder victims needed an advocate, this is it. And that's it is Illinois police corruption and political corruption at its slimiest worst. And court is in session as we speak. But what really got me, what really motivated me to come to Joliet is the attorneys themselves. I would have been an innocent bystander.
Mm-hmm.
Until I saw those antics with the three of them making fun of Stacey Peterson and finding humoring over the death or the disappearance of her. You know, one's disappeared and one accidentally drowned.
Right.
You know? And they got her on the witness list. They may as well put Whitney Houston on the witness list.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when they found so much humor. And with the sunglasses, and it reminded me of they were doing a vaudeville act or something, and it was like the Three Stooges, Moe, Larry, and Curly. That just rattled my cage.
Mm-hmm.
Between that act, then the call, that's what motivated to write the ad. See?
Mm-hmm. Just when you saw the ad.
Yeah, that got me to do the ad. And otherwise, I wasn't doing an ad.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they hadn't done that, nobody would have heard from me. I would have just been watching whatever's on in session. Of course, now I know why the trial's not on TV.
Boy,
trial,
that's true.
You know, in America jurisprudence, this is the most glaring evidence of why there needs to be cameras in a courtroom. This is the case study for why there needs to be cameras, because if this was televised, then America could see, number one, it'd probably be a different trial. Mm-hmm. And number two, if it wasn't, then the country could see and law students could see why there needs to be cameras in a courtroom. This is the glaring example of it.
Exactly. We're talking with Jeff Ruby. Mr. Ruby is involved in being an advocate for Kathleen Savio's family in the case of Drew Peterson. He recently was in court with Drew Peterson, stared him down, and Drew Peterson whined like a little baby, and he was asked to leave the courtroom. And this is not the first time that Mr. Ruby has taken on a case that he feels strongly about. Jeff Ruby owns several fabulous restaurants in Cincinnati. I was looking at your menu, and they look incredible. But let's go way back and kind of start from the beginning. You know, a person just doesn't jump in and start helping with crime victims unless there's a story. And there, you, Mr. Ruby, have a very tragic story about a loved one who was murdered. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that got you into this whole true crime scene, basically?
Well, it goes even back. You know, I got a biography coming out in about 4, 5, 6 months. My whole life story is being written by a guy who's never written. I'll be the first person he's ever done a biography of that. Mm-hmm. That's nobody. He's only done the biography of the Hollywood legends that are legitimate Hollywood legends in the American Film Institute's definition of a legend. He's done Burbank, Ethica, Temple, and a lot of stars. He's read my thing, and he's doing my biography. And he goes, so in my bio, and the money will all go to feed the children. I'm not doing it for money. But it goes back to my childhood. You know, I still don't know who my father was. My biological father was a well-known attorney, but he never took credit or blame for being my father. So he refused to admit he was my father. So I don't even know who my father was. But I ran away from home when I was 15, and I never returned. I raised myself. And and I didn't live with a friend or anything. I lived in an 8x10 rooming house with a bathroom down a hall, and the old women that lived there and the old people that lived there, we shared a bathroom. And I did everything myself. So it goes back to that. And actually, my mother was married 4 times. I call them my forefathers. And so it goes back to that, and it goes back to me helping kids and being a big brother and a surrogate dad to a lot of kids, and helping, having a penchant for the underdog, and that's where it goes starts at. Then my ex-wife's little brother, who again I was like a dad to, he was shot and murdered on his 26th birthday, and he was a kid that needed direction, and I was, and he loved it. And so I, now, he was shot in cold blood while he was sitting in his car. We get a call around 3-something in the morning. His mother lived with her daughter, my wife, at our house. She lived in we had a big house, and she lived in the basement, the bottom floor, but that was like a whole living quarters, you know, her own bedroom, her own kitchen, her own living room, her own entrance and everything. So I even bought her a car. So she lived there, and she was like nanny. And when we got the call, you know, you don't know what it's like until
I can't imagine.
Call at 3 a.m, your child's been shot, and he was in Fairfield Hospital over there. So we drove all the way there. It's about a 30-some-minute drive, and we paced the floor in the hospital for an hour or two until the doctor said he didn't make it. And then I had to help go find the murderer because they didn't know who the murderer was, and I helped get that case solved. And then I sit in the courtroom every day and listen to an attorney defend him and say he was aiming at the street, not at Darren, who was sitting in the car passing his son. So you got to put up with that. Then he gets finally convicted for 20 years, and in Ohio, you serve 8. So his life was worth about 3 years more than the dogs that Michael Vick killed. So that's the system. And there was no fight or altercation. He didn't have a gun. It wasn't self-defense or any of that stuff. That's one. Then I got another kid that was a dishwasher, black kid. That was a teenager. And he didn't have a mother or father. And his name was Dante. And every time I walk in the kitchen of this restaurant's called Carlo and Johnny. I'd walk in the kitchen, And he goes, Rube. I go, Dante, come around from the dish machine, give me a hug, a kiss on the cheek. I give him a kiss on the cheek. And I would talk to him about school and staying off drugs and all those things. And got him his tuxedo for the proms because, you know, he couldn't get a tuxedo. I got the tuxedo for him for the prom so he could go to the prom. A great kid. And he washed dishes. And, you know, he could stay with us. He'd work his way up, be a cook, and who knows what, you know. He was a good kid. He'd have a future with us. And we all started dishwashers sometimes in this business. So then I walk in one afternoon to Carlo and Johnny's. They say, Mr. Rube, we got to talk to you. My employees. And they said, Dante was murdered. I collapsed right in the restaurant and got myself up off the floor, walked over to a chair and started crying. And then I called Keith Fang, who was the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. And I said, listen, Keith, there's a kid that was murdered last night. And he's a black kid in the inner city. And, you know, I just want you to tell the police, all the cops, that I want them to make a sincere effort trying to find this kid because he meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Because they're not really going to pay attention that much of an effort. You know, I'm not saying they're not going to look, you know, but it's in the black neighborhood there with the drugs and everything. So, and I heard that maybe it might have been drug-related, blah, blah, blah. So I said, listen, this kid was a great kid. I loved him. He was very close to me. And I want them to really tell him, Jeff, this kid was very close to Jeff Ruby, and he worked for Jeff. And in Cincinnati, I got a pretty good name and a pretty good reputation with this Cincinnati. In fact, I've been keynote speaker at the FOP twice.
Okay.
I've done a lot for the police. I've given money to their kids when the cop get killed in the line of duty. I give money to the kids, the cop's kids and stuff. And so anyway, he said, Jeff, you got to, I'll do that. But, you know, when there's a reward, boy, it really helps, especially in that neighborhood where those people are really poor. I said, okay, I'll do it. He says, just call the media. You know, the media all knows you. You call to tell the media you want to make an announcement that you're going to do a reward, they'll probably show up.
Oh, yeah.
So I called the four networks, and I said, please come to Carlo and Johnny. I got to make an announcement here, a reward for the kid who was killed, to find the murderer. It came out, and when I came, they all came out. I did four separate interviews. One interview, I was crying during the interview. They found the murderer the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
You know why he was murdered?
I'm afraid to ask.
He testified against, there was two murderers on trial. And the one, and he testified for the state in both. And the one murderer was convicted. The other one was a hung jury, and they were going to retry it. And he testified in that other trial, too. 18 years old.
Oh.
He goes home at 4 in the morning, I think it was, and on his porch and lived with his grandmother. He's going in his house, and it was a hit. The guy on trial had somebody murder him, so he couldn't testify in his trial. And when I learned that, I was in Dayton at my son's high school football game, and I called Keith Fangman, who's my friend. And I was cussing so loud in the bleachers in that high school game, I didn't care. I was just F-bombing everywhere. How could they do that to that kid? Now, if that was somebody else, he would have had police protection, you know?
Well, yeah, that was my first thought. He should have had police protection.
He goes into that neighborhood. He lives in that neighborhood. He's got, you know, and that kid was murdered for doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing, right.
That's the very reason nobody comes forward. No one comes forward to say, yeah, I know who did it. Especially, yeah, so here's another situation with a person that's a little guy, no money, minority, you know, it was black on black crime, and this kid was murdered for coming forward to try to help the police. I was freaking livid. That's number two. Number three goes way back. And back when the Reds were the back-to-back world champions in 1975 and then 1976,
mm-hmm.
I was making about $15,000 a year. I bought my first house, $43,000, in Loveland, Ohio. And two of the Reds roomed with me. I had three small rooms. So one of the Reds was Raleigh Eastwood, the relief pitcher. The other one was Doug Flynn. And they each paid me $75 a month. And I had the one bedroom. They had the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Flynn comes from the most, probably the nicest family you could ever want, from Lexington, Kentucky. Just Southern Christian, just wonderful people. Doug's sister was murdered many years ago. They never found her body. That murder has, and it's been on like the A&E or Doc, one of those channels.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't mention her name. There's a channel that they've shown it a few times where these guys were taking a plane and they were going and getting cocaine and all this and that. And they were tied all the way up to the top level of Kentucky government.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all I'm going to say. I'm talking about all the way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the old Chicago days. Well, it's like the current Chicago days. Anyway, it was tied to the top, strongest, most powerful political people in Kentucky that was connected to these gangsters that were doing the drug smuggling. She, and I didn't know her then, and this was, and I wasn't, I'm so far removed from it that I've only watched and some of it on TV. She was either a secretary in somebody's office or going dating with somebody, and then she found out this guy was corrupt. She knew too much, and they were afraid that she would blow the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
They had to eliminate her. And government, the politics there, who cares?
Right.
We had to go. That's the third person. Now what you have here is evidence that should be coming in. What the state has to overcome more than anything in this trial, the next
Drew
trial
Peterson.
Won't even be a trial. Because
mm-hmm.
what this trial is, they said, because they didn't want, it was one of their own. It was a cop. The Illinois State Police, they couldn't catch a fish in Lake Michigan. They're ridiculous. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they make the Boulder Police Department in Denver. Remember the
I'm very, very involved with that, yes.
Remember the Boulder Police,
mm-hmm.
Colorado?
Yes, I do.
Well, this police investigator, whoever did the investigation, I'm not saying the entire Illinois State Police, but that, other than that kid that got on the stand the other day for the state, that kid has been promoted now to a master sergeant, whatever he is. That kid is sharp. That kid, they wouldn't listen to that kid, okay? And he's not a kid anymore, but he's a young guy, and I'm 64.
And he's the one that said that Kathleen was murdered. Is that the one you're talking about?
He's the one that said, this don't look like a drowning to me. And
right.
This looks suspicious. He's the one that said, why are you interviewing Casey? Why are you interviewing Drew Peterson or Stacy Peterson in front of her husband, and all this? They said, shut up and mind your own business, basically. That guy is the right guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy. But those other ones, that deal or whatever his name, he's the bad deal, okay? Those guys make the Boulder police look like the CIA. So here you got, to overcome what they has officially determined the cause of death to be an accidental drowning. Now, the leading expert on homicidal drownings, and believe it or not, I didn't know there was such a thing until I was watching Jeanine Pirro's show, and she was on their show.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, by the way, she has emailed, she has Facebooked me, and I don't have Facebook, so it went to one of my people, who then sent it to me on email. and she wants me to meet with her and get involved to help victims, you know, to teach law enforcement and victims of crime and blah, blah, blah. And I got to get back to her. Her name escapes me right now. I was so impressed with her. Turns out the judge would not allow an expert on drowning and homicidal drowning to testify on behalf of the state. When you have that to overcome, they're saying it's a drowning. It was the cause of death was listed as drowning originally. The defense says she drowned. They've got experts that are going to come in and say she drowned. The police said she drowned. Here you can bring in an expert say there's no way that was a drowning, and here's the reasons why, and that's her expertise. They said she can't come in because the defense doesn't have enough time to find somebody to counter her. So,
oh, my God.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that?
No.
You tell me why that – and that's just – do you know that Drew Peterson, after the death of Kathy Savino, told Stacy, told Candace, the aunt, who I talked to, by the way, and a gal named Donna, I could make anyone disappear and they would never find her. I could kill somebody and make it look like an accident. You know what Stacy said to him?
What? What?
Not this chickie. And
mm-hmm.
he did it to her. Now, that's not hearsay because two people besides Stacy, he said it to after Kathleen Savio drowned. Okay? After the death of Kathleen Savio, he said that. They wouldn't let Candace come in. They wouldn't let whoever that Donna was come in. Okay? They can't testify.
That's obscene. That's obscene. That's ridiculous.
That's not hearsay. That's not heresy. That's not her say. That's he say.
Mm-hmm. That's him talking. You're absolutely right. We're talking, let me just tell everybody what we're doing here. We're talking with Jeff Ruby. Mr. Ruby is a victim's advocate. He spends his own money, his own time helping the underdog, as they say, and he flew out into Juliet, Chicago.
I didn't fly out. I got my own tour bus and we drove.
Ah, you drove. Okay. We drove out to Joliet, Illinois, and sat in and got into a staring contest with Drew Peterson, mouthed a few choice words that we all want to say to him and more, and was asked to leave the courtroom. You are just a fascinating guest, Mr. Ruby. We have a couple of questions from the people in our chat room. One of them, when is your new ad coming out, and what is it going to say, or is that what the press conference is about on Monday?
Well, no, the press conference isn't about ads. I have a major, major announcement to make tomorrow, and I'm doing it in front of the police headquarters, Cincinnati Police Headquarters tomorrow, on their front yard, District 1, and the Chief of Police, James Craig, Cincinnati Police Chief, will be there, and so will the Hamilton County District Attorneys be there, at least two or three of them.
Can you give us a hint, just a little hint, teeny weeny?
And Joe Dieters is the district attorney, the head guy, and I just talked to him. He's in Tampa at the Republican convention, and otherwise he'd be there, but he's going to have two or three of his assistants there. But the ads, I wrote the last two or three days. There's about six of them. And as soon as we can get my marketing guy that does marketing and my daughter have marketing, but he's the guy that then designs the ads and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know how much lead time they're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
Available and all that. But I hope to get it in Wednesday, and it'll be in the Tribune. It'll be in the Sun-Times. Now, the Sun-Times also owns the other papers in those other suburbs, or Joliet is a city, I guess. What is Joliet? A city or a town? Or
I believe it's a city.
Okay. Well, there's other cities in that area Aurora, whatever they are, and there's 20 of them, and there's 20 newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And when we placed that first ad in that Sun Times, I didn't know, but it went into 20 other newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And one was the Herald News, which is Joliet. So I suppose that these ads will run in 21 papers.
I'm sure they will.
They're not all going to be in the Tribune because they're too much money.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sun Times, the first one's going to be, because I'm coming out with the first one swinging. And then after the other ones. But these ads are much, much more stronger than the first ones. And the first ones weren't too.
How about if you give us a hint what they say? Just kind of a hint, just a little one.
About the evidence?
No, about what's going to be in your ad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be about the evidence not being brought in.
Got it. Okay, got it.
And I'll give you one. And
okay.
If my attorney doesn't, my attorney's so mad at me, he won't even go to the press conference.
If he's mad, then heck, make him madder. What the heck? What does it matter? Tell us. We want to know.
I want you to go, everybody listening, and look up the lyrics to Hey Jude by the Beatles.
Oh, I could sing it to you right now.
Let it out. But let it in, too. You know, let some of it in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at J-U-D-E and you put a little G, you got Judge. And
mm-hmm.
You got Hey Jude. So let it out and let it in.
And let it in. Hey Jude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let it out and let it in. Well, he's letting it out, but he ain't letting it in.
Mm-hmm.
He's keeping it all out. And there's going to be a lyrical nexus to that song, to this trial, only instead of Jude, it's Judge.
Ah, got it.
Okay? So that's the theme of one. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got this thing, you know, it's not Will County, they ought to change the name to Won't County, and you know, there's a lot of sarcasm and
mm-hmm.
it's all based on here's the deal. You know, it's all the truth. This has gone from a murder trial to a political trial, and I make no bones about it. It's no longer, you know what it is? It's
what?
Not the state versus Peterson, it's the judge versus the state attorney.
The judge versus his old running mate. And don't you think at just the appearance of impropriety doesn't mean that anything improper is happening, but the appearance of it possibly happening is enough for this judge to recuse himself, don't you think?
That in itself is a legal term, giving the
mm-hmm.
appearance of. And that's
yes.
what has happened.
It's just so frustrating. We're talking with Jeff Ruby, and I know we're going to hear a lot more about Jeff Ruby in the days to come, and I have a feeling with our true crime members that love true crime and are interested and want to help others that we'll be getting to know Mr. Jeff Ruby quite well, and we will absolutely adore and love what he is doing. Mr. Ruby, you just basically took a bus to the trial of Drew Peterson, and you got in. Tell us about when you went in and what happened. I mean, was he looking around at everybody? Did he lock eyes with you immediately? Describe how that all went down.
That's another thing. That's another thing, okay? What he does in that courtroom that he gets away with, he looks at 17-year-old girls.
Oh.
Winks at 17-year-old girls and pats his heart with his hand as he's winking at them, that he loves them. How sick is this lowlife, and he's getting away with it with that freaking in that courtroom.
Can't somebody complain, or would it matter? I mean, that's just obscene.
That defense team runs that courtroom.
Oh, my gosh. So you walk in, and you notice him doing this, obviously,
No,
right?
No. Well, everybody knows he's doing it. Everybody. One of my ads, where the hell is it? One of the ads even says, here it is. Here's one of my ads. America is watching. The layperson tuned to in session is in complete unanimity that Will County can see justice is not being served in what happened to Ms. Savio in 2004. That a judge just might see to it that a prosecutor gets his payback for what happened to him in 1992. That three lawyers who look like mafia goons in Midnight Run, that was a hilarious movie.
Great movie.
De Niro and Charles Grodin and those mafia goons, to everyone's surprise, could actually ham it up for more TV time in 1 week than their client did in 5 years. That Drew Peterson is winking at blondes in the courtroom. And the headline is America is watching Joliet Justice. Now, and by the way, the only reason I put my name Jeff Ruby, the only reason I put Cincinnati, Ohio, was because the restaurant critic in the Chicago magazine, his name is Jeff Ruby.
Really?
Yeah, I've known that forever. So if I don't put Cincinnati, Ohio, to define that it's not the local Jeff Ruby, the Chicago magazine, I could really be in trouble.
Right.
You know, it would be more. So I had to put Cincinnati. So anyway, otherwise, who cares where I'm from? I don't have restaurants here. So here's the deal. What I didn't know until recently, it's also 17-year-old girls in there, which was the age of Stacy when the 47.
Yeah.
Did you know that she was 16 when he started with her?
I didn't. I thought she was 17.
16. The media gets that. They're defending her. They're even talking on TV. Well, she was 19 and blah. She was 16 when he started with
her. Oh, that makes me sick.
Okay? 16. Okay? That doesn't mean they had sex. Maybe they just went to Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know. But
yeah.
16, okay?
Oh, my God. 16. He should have been arrested for that.
No. Do you know that there was a cocaine? They had these two Hispanic guys. That the narcotics unit that he worked for, they were all watching. They had these guys. They know exactly who they were. They know exactly what was in the car. $35,000 in cash under the back seat of the car, and cocaine was in the trunk. And Peterson and his partner were the ones assigned to get them. It was in the mid-90s. By the time backup got there, the cocaine was there and the $35,000 was gone.
Oh, my God. It doesn't surprise me.
They,
I don't know why I'm acting surprised.
They knew that, and they knew exactly what was in the car. They just wanted to catch him with it in the car. And Peterson and his partner were the ones that pulled him over. And then when the backup got there, the 35 was gone. Again, they didn't do it, and they couldn't prove it. They had another case in, I think it was the 80s, and similar type of thing. So Peterson's entitled to a speedy trial. And so the speedy trial was 180 days, and the prosecutor at the time didn't file the papers in time. So it was thrown out because he didn't get the trial started on time. He demanded a speedy trial, 6 months, boom. That case never went to court. And that was another one. Listen, when you're making $42,000 a year and you're a millionaire, I mean, you know what's going on. And that was before he got the money for Salvio's insurance, the $1 million he was worth. I learned more sitting at a blackjack table at Harris. I'm at Harris. I go to the high roller table. There's only one guy sitting there. He doesn't know me from a big black German shepherd.
Okay.
He starts talking. He said, well, what are you doing in town? I said, I just came in for the, you know, true piece of. Turns out the guy is a former prosecutor from way back when, right here.
Oh, my gosh.
He telling me stuff. Boom, 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 boom. I'm learning this stuff from him.
Oh, my gosh. It's almost like you were meant to sit next to him. You needed to hear this stuff. So are you going to, is there any way that could be reinvestigated, do you think, and looked at again? Do you think they don't even care?
Well, the statute of limitations is gone on that.
Well, that's true.
Murder. it wasn't murder. But,
right.
But nobody, you know, it's Illinois. You know,
mm-hmm.
they got enough. That could be the only state in America that could have an overcrowded prison system just with the governor population.
Jeez. Mr. Ruby, we're talking with Jeff Ruby, who was at the Drew Peterson trial. I want to get back to, if you can, when you walked in the courtroom, and I want you to lead us up to the time when you locked eyes with Drew Peterson. What happened?
Well, it was during a break. It was during a break, and I wasn't too pleased that they're not going to elect. They've got a thing now they call a marital privilege, which basically gives you the privilege to murder your wife. That's what marital privilege is. So when he told Stacy, I can commit the perfect murder, and he also told her that he had... Oh, God, I don't want to tell you. A whole bunch of other things that he said that basically said he murdered Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
But he said those things to Stacy. Now, when Stacy told the pastor, who I've talked to, by the way, when he told the pastor that, so when rather than lie and just get it a little bit mixed up in order, which is I think is a white lie.
Mm-hmm.
Once Neil Shorey, right?
Right.
At the thing, the pastor. All right. When Shorey told them that, he said, if the police ask, here's where I was doing this, blah blah blah. Okay, the police are going to talk to you. Once he says that, all bets are off. Then anything he says after that, marital privilege doesn't exist anymore because he's gone public, he's committed a crime to tell a lie or whatever. Okay?
Right.
So anything he says. So Shorey said, well, he said, Stacy told me that first she said he just committed the perfect crime.
Mm-hmm.
I just committed the perfect crime. I killed her. And something else, I don't know, it doesn't matter. It was huge. It was almost huger than I just committed the perfect crime. I think
that's pretty big, right.
Okay? Those two huge things were not permitted because he said that before he said, here's what you tell the police. If he says, here's what you tell the police, and then he says, after that, yeah, I just committed the perfect crime, then you can say, I just committed the perfect crime. Then that comes in.
Right.
That's how stupid the lawyers. So now that's covered by marital privilege, which is basically, if you kill your wife, anything you said to her that she says to anybody can't come in. It's marital privilege to kill your wife. That's a great concept.
Oh,
that's
good Lord. Unbelievable.
That means also, the wife can kill the husband. And the husband's screwed. So it works both ways. It's not just the advantage to the husband. So it's very fair in that sense.
No,
it's fair.
Yeah, there you go.
We can kill each other and get away with it. It's not just the guys that can get away with it.
As long as we're fair, you know?
we're very balanced here with this speech. So,
oh, brother.
So Shorey, you know, should have said, hey, listen, if the police say anything, here's where I was with you all day. Was that? Well, because I just committed the perfect murder. No, then that's okay. It could come in. All right? So now, the judge, I can't blame the judge. If that's the law, then that's the way he's got to go. The law's the law. So you can't blame the judge for that. You know?
Right.
And otherwise, if it's not the law, then it's reversible on appeal. You can't blame the judge for
that.
What the heck's the matter? You got to tell a white lie? You know, it's not, you know, you're religious, you know, but thou shalt not kill is also a thing I think it's kind of trumps that, you know?
It, Exactly. So you walk in and all of this is going on and you're upset, right?
So let me tell you. So when I heard that, I was also told that the judge may not allow him to testify at all, and I'm married. So I wasn't in the best mood.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk outside, go in the hallway, and I found out, no, he's going to be able to testify. Everything's fine. There's plenty of stuff he's going to be able to say. And Beth Karras told me that, and Jeff Gold told me that, legal analyst, and somebody else told me that from whatever. And I said, okay, well, there's enough. So I'm okay now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm standing up now. I enter the doors. I'm standing up waiting for to be seated rather than sit down. You know, it's tight in there. So I'm just standing up. Drew Peterson turns around and starts giving me the dirty look. I'm
just
you.
He picked you out. He picked you out and started giving you the dirty look. He doesn't know you, does he?
He knows who I am because he's been told. He knows what I'm doing.
Okay.
He knows I'm on a crusade to get him convicted. He knows that.
Okay.
You know, because he's got his attorneys saying, they're feeding him. He knows what's going on. He gets the papers. He sees the TV. He knows what's going on.
He sees the ads. Okay.
So, all right. And I'm telling you, if looks could kill, I would have been his third victim. That's how he stared me down.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept staring him down. And that was that. And I'm looking at this thing right now, this arrest warrant. And it says committed offense that I uttered profanity. I didn't utter a sound. There was no word that came out of my mouth. There was no audible. There was nothing. Okay?
But you mouthed a couple of words, correct? No sound.
Well,
no sound.
No sound. You got to be a lip reader to determine what I might have said, because it was like a ventriloquist. You have to be able to read the lips pretty good because I didn't open my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my lips.
You moved your lips
as slightly as I could do it. My lips moved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, my mouth might have opened a quarter of an inch, an eighth of an inch. But sir, uttered a profanity. How do you utter? What does utter mean?
I don't. You know what? I don't know. It means slightly say under your breath, perhaps. But you didn't. You didn't say anything. But come on now, don't you think that? I mean, what were you trying to do when you were moving your lips?
Letting him know how I feel about him.
Ah, gotcha. Well, I think if it's what I think, and that's just my interpretation, it doesn't mean that you said it. It's just my interpretation of it. I can say that pretty much all of America feels the exact same way. Now, I read that, and I hope I'm wrong here, I read, Mr. Jeff Ruby, that you could possibly be brought up on charges, or is that not true?
I was served a subpoena for arrest, and I was arrested.
Oh, you were? Oh, my gosh, that's right. So what happens now?
Utter means to emit speech, enumicate,
mm-hmm.
talk, pronounce, say, speak, vocalize. Okay? So they got this thing wrong right off the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, they're utterly wrong here.
Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do?
What am I going to do?
I mean, are you going to fight it, or what happens next?
Oh, they just did this because they're afraid I'm going to sue them, so they arrested me so they could beat me to the punch and not look reactionary. So they were afraid by throwing me out I might sue them, so they did this as a preemptive strike, in my opinion, number
mm-hmm.
one. Number two, if Peterson's found not guilty, you won't see me near that place because I would be in harm's way. I'm not going to have him. I'm not going to go back there and be. I think I would be ill advised to go back there with him on the loose, knowing how he wants to get even with me now. There's
right.
no way I'm going there. The guy's a killer.
Yes.
Okay. There are people back in that area feel that he's killed more than two people.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Would it surprise you?
No. there's a lot of people that feel he's killed more than two people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm not saying he has. I don't know. But in my opinion, he killed those two. In my opinion, he killed Kathleen. And in my opinion, Stacy's not missing.
Right. I agree. I think everybody feels that way, too. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr.
Ruby. I'm on the board of Texas Equisearch.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Equisearch spent a lot of time and money looking for Stacy. They found the drum, the 55-gallon chlorine drum that she was put in. They found what they felt was a body. There's pictures of them. And you can look at the picture in the water, and you would think that's a body down there. The Illinois State Police said that Texas, and it was in the canal right over there by Bolingbrook. Their equipment isn't good. Texas Equisearch is finding a lot more bodies than the Illinois State Police.
They're amazing, yes. Absolutely amazing group. We love them.
And I went with them on foot last year looking for a gal that's missing here in Fairfield, and I got a $50,000 reward for, to find her.
Mm-hmm.
And some 21-year-old girl that went missing in Fairfield, Ohio, and I went with Texas. I gave them money to keep those, so they have the finances to keep searching, and got to know Tim, and they put me on the board. I want to get Texas Equisearch back out there.
Mm-hmm.
But those remains, what they had there was a good shot to get her, but now if there's anything left, it would just be part of the skull.
Right.
So, it's just a total fiasco what happened with those two victims and the police and the politics now going on in that courtroom.
Well,
politics in that courtroom is the worst part. Lopez is a good attorney. Greenberg's a good attorney. The other guy's a cartoon, but that's another story.
We're talking with Jeff Ruby, and Mr. Ruby, basically, your goal here is 2 points. You want to expose what's going on in the courtroom with the injustice of the judge and the, what he's doing or what he's not doing, I should say. In addition to, make sure that Drew Peterson is convicted for these crimes. You're taking this on yourself. You're spending your own money. And next up tomorrow, we have a big press conference where you're going to announce something. And you will have some state officials with you as well. So obviously they're behind you on this big announcement. What time is the press conference?
4:30. The only one speaking up that has a journalistic courage to speak up and say it like it is Jeanine Pirro.
She's wonderful. We love Jeanine. Judge Pirro is fantastic.
Media, the other media feels they have to stay fair and balanced,
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they can't, maybe because they feel they will tilt the scales and they would be considered, it would be ripe for appeal if they voiced one against the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
The state can't get a retrial. Only
right.
only the criminal can get a retrial. The state is screwed. If anybody makes a mistake against the state, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They
can't be retried.
It can't be retried, no matter how the judge or the state or the defendant. Anybody screws up, there's no retrial.
Mm-hmm.
But if the state screws up or anybody else, is a retrial. So that's the way it is. And then there's no double, that's called double jeopardy, and that's why O.J. wasn't ever retried for that.
Mm-hmm.
He was in civil court, and that didn't mean anything anyway. He never gave Fred Goldman a nickel.
Right. Still hasn't. So what's next? After the press conference, there'll be some more ads, and then what's next? What can we expect to hear from Jeff Ruby?
Well, I'm not allowed in the courtroom or on the grounds. I held my press conference just to apologize to the judge
mm-hmm.
from the sidewalk, and the cameras were all turned around, and they got a podium out there and mics, and they all gave me that little few minutes to, at my request, and they had to rearrange everything so I could do it from the sidewalk, which is public property, not part of the grounds. It's
mm-hmm.
the only time I ever asked to speak, and that was to just tell the judge, I screwed up. I made a mistake. I was stupid. I said all those things to the judge.
That was very good. I like that you did that.
Because it was in the courtroom. It was in the courtroom. And, but the only thing I did was that quiet little lip
thing.
Of that was, and it wasn't where I did it. You know how you open your mouth really big and you can wide and you can lip somebody and not make a noise. I didn't do it that way. I did it so subtly that, you know, and the judge wasn't in there. That's why it's indirect contempt of court. And he wasn't in there and the jury wasn't there. It wasn't during the trial. You know what this reminds me of?
What's that?
It reminds me of the Casey Anthony trial. The only one that was, went to jail was the kid from Fridays.
That's right.
The prosecutor, the finger. He's the only one that went to jail in that trial.
That's right. And you might be the only one that goes to jail here, but I hope not. I really don't think so. I think he's going
to
be found guilty.
I already went to jail. No, I
but
already
yet, you
went
did.
To jail.
Right.
So in the Casey Anthony trial, what does the Casey Anthony trial and the Drew Peterson trial have in common? Two people in the restaurant business in the courtroom were sent to jail. That's the only thing that's what they have in trial.
That's an odd connection. Mr. Ruby, I want to tell you, Web Sleuths is a very, very large forum. We have 50,000 plus members, people from all over the world. It's a great platform to get the word out. Now, we spoke a little bit off air, and you're not into the internet like a lot of us are, but I can assure you that if you need help with something, if there is something that we can do to help you, please do not hesitate to call me. We would be glad to help you because so many people are impressed and thrilled with what you're doing and how you're going about it. Your heart is in the right place. You know, you're doing it for the good of others. And you're putting your own money. You know, you've made you have a great career as a restaurant owner, and you're taking that money and you're doing some good with it. So please don't hesitate to rely on Web Sleuths and the people that we have, because we're here to help you. And I hope that you will come back on in a little while so we can talk more about the case. And as it gets closer to your book being released, we can have you back on then as well. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing before we have to move on, Mr. Ruby?
No, I appreciate it because this helps get some of this awareness. You know, it's like you're trying to raise money for cancer research or any foundations, and you want to get awareness out to try to help the cause. And in this cause, at least this little form here helped to get some awareness of what's going on. And that's why I did the ads.
Well, it certainly is, and the only way to deal with corruption or even the possibility of corruption is to put a harsh, big light on it, because that dries it up and makes it go away, and that's exactly what you're doing. Jeff Ruby, thank you so much. Our hat's off to you for doing what you're doing, and anything we can do to help, please don't hesitate to ask. Good luck in the press conference tomorrow. We'll be watching and covering it as well, okay?
When you get done, please give me a call. I'd like to ask you something, okay?
Absolutely. We'll do, Mr. Ruby. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're
Bye-bye.
Welcome.
Bye. Wow, that was an amazing interview. Okay, hold on one second, Kimster. Da, 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 da. Are you there, Kimster?
I'm holding.
Okay.
We have another guest in the wings. Another case. This time we need a lot of help.
Okay, hold on. Just one second here. Okay, I'm just doing some technical stuff. Okay, now we're going to move on. That was Jeff Ruby. He did not disappoint. We knew he'd be an interesting guest. I knew I wasn't going to have to say much, which I love. And I think we have just barely scraped the tip of that huge iceberg as far as the stories, information that Jeff Ruby has. And so I'm hoping he'll be back with us very, very soon. We're going to move on now. Web Sleuths, we really want to help people who don't have the media spotlight shining on them and their cases. We want to help those people that, you know, are the underdog and need the help of strangers. And this next case is very, tragic. I mean, I'm sure the family is just going out of their minds with worry. Johnny Brown, 44, from Georgia, disappeared from Myrtle Beach on August 3rd. He left walking on South Ocean Boulevard, walking towards Family Kingdom around 5:30. He is a special needs adult, and we have on the phone with us right now Johnny Brown's sister, Julie. And Julie, thank you so much for joining us on True Crime Radio. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay, Julie, tell us what happened leading up to Johnny's disappearance, and then we'll talk about Johnny himself. So give us the background. What led up to when you found out he was missing?
Okay, we arrived at Seacrest off Ocean Boulevard, 803 Ocean Boulevard, on August the 2nd, which was a Thursday. And we arrived at 8 o'clock p.m., and it was a family vacation from stemming up to where we had planned this, because my mother had been sick with cancer, and she survived and everything, and she's in a mission with her cancer. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to take her out and come to a vacation, which they'd never been on vacation out of Georgia. And Johnny Lamar Brown. He's 45 years of age. He's an African-American, mm-hmm. and he's special needed, and he has a speech impairment. And he enjoys his dog, Blackie, and he enjoys his family, and mm-hmm. he's a loner. And so he, on August the 3rd, we got up and we started out to dinner about, I guess it was like around about 3:30-ish on Friday. And Johnny pointed to one of the family members and said he wanted to go up to the Family Kingdom amusement park because he's very fond of the lights and the big Ferris wheels, because where we live in Georgia, the fair comes right across the street from our residential area.
And that's what he likes.
And he always go over there every night. And he goes on Wednesday night where it'd be children's night. And he always go over there on Wednesday nights and enjoy the lights and just having fun. Mm-hmm. And so he pointed out to us that he wanted to go up there. And we said, well, it's like two blocks from where we were staying, Seacrest, Ocean Boulevard, which that's not no long distance. It would be from the distance from my parents' house to the fairground where he go, where the fair comes.
Okay.
And so he went there, and he went there about 4 o'clock that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And when he come back, we noticed a co-worker that worked, well, not a co-worker, but one of the hotel workers that worked at Seacrest, said he came back down that strip and sat right across from the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he stated to her, I'm lost. I'm lost. I need to find my family. And she kept asking him, where do you stay? Where do you stay? And she worked in that very deal, the same hotel that we stayed in, but she worked on the 6th floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed on the 2nd or the 3rd floor. So their assignment is up on the 6th floor. He said,
okay.
I don't know. I'm looking for my family.
Oh, no.
And so when she said she got up, and she said, where do you stay? How can we help you?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know. And he looked at her, and he got up, and he walked away from the amusement park. This, keep in mind now, where he was sitting at was right across from the hotel.
Right.
But he got up and walked the other direction instead of coming, you know, instead of coming across the street to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, about 6:30 or 7, we discovered that he hadn't got back yet. We had come from the little restaurant that was added on to the hotel, which is a Loco, Gato, I don't know. It's been open for 6 months.
Okay.
It's a little restaurant attached on to the hotel. And when we come from now, we realize he hadn't got back up into his hotel room. And we started wondering, where could he be? Where is he at? And so we took off and went up to that amusement park to look for him. So we didn't see any sight or anything of him. And so about 9 o'clock, we saw a hotel right across the street from us, and we saw the Myrtle Beach police directly across. And that's
mm-hmm.
when I went and reported my brother being missing. I said he never did report back into his hotel or come back to us.
Right, right.
And the police took a statement at that time. They come 10 o'clock, 10:30 rolling up. And because somehow, I don't know how, he got down on Surfside. He was on Surfside of the area. Surfside, down there on Surfside. I'm not familiar with the area because we're not from there.
Right, right. I was going to say, do you know how close it was to the hotel motel where you were staying? How far? Was that just a few miles? Or
it was like about 20, if you're driving, it's about 15, 20-minute drive.
Okay,
so if you're walking, it's got to be a little bit more than that, about an hour.
At least an hour, sure.
Yeah. And you keep in mind, this is all night. This mental challenging man is trying to walk.
Oh, that poor man.
So
He
done walked all the way down on that side, not realizing where he was at, because he took probably the back roads. And if you take King's Highway, it leads you right out on that highway going down towards that area.
Uh-huh.
Not realizing where you're at. And so he got down in that area. And from some understanding description, I think a cab driver picked him up, and he couldn't explain to her where he needed to be because of his speech impairment. He's mentally challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And she carried him on over, and she said, I think she might have asked him, did he have any cab fare? And he said, shook his head, no, because he always shake his head, no. He don't never make no answers or anything. He don't never verbally answer you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went on down towards that way, and she let him out on 501, somewhere in there on that highway. I can't say if it's a highway going out. She
right.
just told him, well, you know, you don't have any cab fare, and I can't understand what you're saying. And he wrote down Cartersville, Georgia, because that's where we're originally from, Georgia, Cartersville, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote that down. And so she just let him out there, and I guess on his way trying to make it back towards where he needed to be, Georgetown Police Department picked him up. They didn't pick him up. They might have stopped him.
Stopped him, okay.
Yeah, they stopped him, and I guess they ran an NCIC on the database to see if he was wanted or anything for anything.
Right.
And they found out that he wasn't wanted, so they took him back to Horry County. They carried him back to Horry County, which is a little bit before Surfside.
Mm-hmm.
And so they called Surfside, because he told them Seacrest. And with his speech impairment, you can't understand what he was saying.
What he was saying, right.
Yeah. So he told them that he stayed at Seacrest, but they was asking, did he work there or stay there? And so he must have told them he stayed there. And with him not saying, you know, with his speech impairment, he nods his head, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they must have asked, do you work there or you stay there? And he nodded his head.
Yes, right.
And so they called the Seacrest Hotel about 10 o'clock that night, Friday night, and asked, did you have a Johnny Lamar Brown employed? And they said, no, we don't.
Oh,
because
no.
Because he's up under our party name, the Nance name.
Mm-hmm.
They say, no, we do not have a Johnny Lamar Brown employed.
Oh, no.
And he knows that's where he was at because he had the key in his pocket, but the key don't have the name on it, hotel name on it.
Oh, they were so close. Oh, my goodness.
So close to bring my brother to us.
So then what happened?
And the next morning, I went in there and asked Seacrest, hotel clerk and the manager. I said, did y'all have anybody to bring a missing man in by Johnny Brown, a missing man in? She said, no, ma'am. And I said, his name is Johnny Lamar Brown. And the manager herself said, she said, you know, I don't ever come in on no night shift, but I had to come up here because of a problem. She said, the police called and asked if we have a Johnny Brown that was employed here.
Mm-hmm.
And we told her no. Because, see, they misunderstood what he was saying.
They misunderstood. Right.
Yeah, they misunderstood what he was saying because of his speech and his mental disability.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a good clue.
I'm sorry. So go ahead.
I'm sorry. You.
I was just going to say, that's where you start. You have to start right there. And I'm sure you're panicked beyond belief.
And see, while we was giving a report, we never did go back to Seacrest and tell them that our brother was missing. Because
you wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think, right.
Yeah, that he was going to be missing, you know.
Right.
And so anyways, we come on back over. And so after that, in so many days that went by, I just have to kind of like remember what took place. And
so,
after that, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so the police call the hotel, and they say, no, we don't have anybody working here. So they just let him go?
They let him go because they didn't see him doing any wrongs or they didn't find anything on him. So they let him go.
Boy.
And some kind of way between on Surf, he ended up on Surfside that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the same employee that had told, as the employee had, that told my mother, she said at 4 o'clock that day, she said, "Well, yo, will she come in that morning at 8 o'clock that morning?" Now
mm-hmm.
keep in mind, my brother had been trying to call home all night Friday.
Oh,
but
my gosh, that poor man.
To Georgia while we was here,
uh-huh.
while we was there. He was calling back to Georgia, our home phone number, which he knows because we've been having it for like 35, 40 years.
Right, so he knows it.
Yeah, he was trying to call home while
mm-hmm.
we were still there on vacation. And that was that Friday night all the way up to that Saturday morning. He was calling from different places.
Julie, have they looked at any video cameras from where they last the police last saw him?
The only positive sighting that we got, sweetie, is from the Giants Beach Wear in Surfside, Giant Beach Wear in Surfside store,
mm-hmm.
and we saw him ourselves on that video where he was in a panic and pacing that floor while walking, trying to call home.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Oh, my God, that's just so heartbreaking. So, okay, Julie, what can we do to help you? I mean, we'll get the word out. We'll put his picture everywhere.
If anybody listening to this and everybody listening to this, by now he done grow the beard. He probably done changed clothes. And he probably got a wild eye look, you know, like disordered look.
I'm sure he's just terrified.
He was terrified. Who wouldn't be?
Exactly.
He's terrified because he's never been out of state of Georgia. He always been just close to his dog, Blackie. And he's just a homebound person. And he wouldn't harm a fly. He wouldn't hurt nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to come back home to his dog, Blackie, and his family. And I don't mean to break down, but I apologize. I'm just so
don't apologize.
It's like a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
You wake up. It's like you just want to go to sleep and wake up until it's over with.
It is a nightmare. Julie, have you reached out to any organizations that deal with missing adults or...
I reached out to Texas EquiSearch. They're supposed to be on ground hopefully sometime this week, which is Tuesday and Wednesday.
They're wonderful. You will love them. They are fantastic. And so the police down there, now they know. So they're hopefully hyper aware of what he looks like because, you know, he could end up at a homeless shelter. You know, maybe somebody took him in. You know, there's all kinds of scenarios. So
with him having that speech impairment, you might not understand what he's saying. But and if he tell you Ford Street or McDonald's and a Waffle House, he telling you, that's where he lived, close by in Cartersville, Georgia. That's Georgia, a little bit past Atlanta, Georgia, a little bit north of Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he lived. If he say, and he'll speak like Cartersville, he'll speak real fast. And then now, from the last sighting, some people say he just nodding his head back and forth or up and down when you ask him something.
Right.
And
Julie,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Some of our listeners, we have a chat room going, and they're suggesting there are billboard companies that will donate space. And perhaps maybe even the people at Texas EquiSearch could help you with this. Maybe try and find a billboard company that will donate space to put your brother's picture up and a phone number. That might be a way to go, too. And if you need help with that, contact us, and I'm sure we can find somebody on Web Sleuths that can help you as well, because this is a huge undertaking. It's not something that you expect to be doing. You know, you're thrown into it, and it's just, like you said, it's a nightmare. Do you know any phone numbers that people could call, or, you know, the police department? What if somebody listening who thinks even the slightest chance they may have seen your brother Johnny, what should they do?
Call Julie Ann. My mother and father, let me get this out to everybody. If you see him, say, Johnny, Ruby, my mother's name is Ruby, and my father's name is John. He's a pastor, and my mother, her name is Ruby. And he always called my mother by the name of Ruby Pop.
Mm-hmm.
Say, Ruby Pop is waiting on you, and Rev is looking for you.
Oh.
Blackie is waiting on you to come home and see him and take him for a walk. And your sister Julianne is out here. She's trying to seek you and find you, and she's not going to leave you. You tell them that. Whoever is listening to this, tell them that. And
right.
And don't even hesitate to say it looked like him. Call the police or call me. Go up to him, because he might shoot you out, like, because he's a loner.
Right.
And he ain't going to take up with too many people. But just say, look, Johnny, your family, don't be scared of him, because he's not going to hurt you. Because
right.
This man is confused, he's disoriented, and he's afraid that his family done left him and forgot about him probably.
Right.
But whoever is listening, and if you see him, go to Surfside, because the last place he was sighted was Surfside on the front road at that flea market. And the water park, I think it's Wild Willie's water park, and then up going towards Denny's, and back then, and he kind of like take to the wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Blackie goes in the wooded area, and they sit back there and calm themselves. But please, whoever listening to this, don't even hesitate. If you think it's him, just call, because, see, we stand a day behind him. Whenever somebody getting a leads to us, it's like a day or two or a week behind, because you're not for sure. But to be for sure, call anyways.
Well, yeah,
call,
you'd rather be, you know, safe and call first. Absolutely.
Yeah, call the police, and he's afraid of the police too. He don't take to the police officers. He's afraid of the police too.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody, please listen to my voice.
What's the phone number so we can get out? We do have it on the thread at Web Sleuths, but what's your phone number?
404-576-6306. Call me anytime. I don't care if it's at nighttime, because one eye is open and one eye is closed. My eyes won't close until I know my brother is safe and sound.
Call me. You are such a good sister, and just know, like I told Mr. Ruby, that you know, thousands and tens of thousands of people are wanting to help you, and we're here. We have a thread, a discussion going about your brother at Web Sleuths. Once again, we are looking for an adult. He's been missing since August 3rd, I believe. And his
Correct.
Name is Johnny Brown. He's
Johnny
44.
Johnny Lamar Brown.
And he is a special needs adult. You will probably have trouble understanding him, but just tell him that his mama is waiting, and his dog Blackie, and his sister Julie, and contact the police. Contact Julie.
And I want to add this. He's 5'4". And he's 146 pounds when we last saw him. And the last time somebody sighted him was that he had on some dark, dark blue jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And had the same shirt on and his hat. Now, he had got a cap on. Don't get messed up. He got a hat on. He got a cap on. And the last cap he was wearing was a tan cap with camouflage in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had on some black ankle socks, Nike socks, and black flip-flops. Now, he might have done changed shoes, but anyways, he probably done got facial hair. But anyway, don't be afraid. I mean, I know people don't like to approach people because I don't, but at the same time, this is just very urgent that you do this.
Absolutely.
You don't know, by the time you get home and say, well, I know that was him, just do what your instincts tell you to do because your instincts, your first instincts never go wrong.
Exactly, and you'd rather be a mistake than nobody call at all, even if you have the slightest inkling that it might be, just call, for goodness sakes. Julie,
our brother home with us. That's our brother, and we're a good praying family. And we want to thank each and everybody just giving us our support and love and contribution. But please, y'all, that's more than important is just sending my brother back with us. We're gonna come back to the South Carolina area this weekend. Mm-hmm. But we hope we won't have to come the weekend if somebody call us and say, your brother is right here with me.
Right. Well, we will hope and pray for that as well, Julie, and we're here for you. And don't hesitate to contact me. If there's anything that Web Sleuths or myself can do, we would be glad to help. And we are praying for you, Julie. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Trish. Thank you.
Take care. We'll be in touch, okay? Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my gosh, Kimster. My heart is breaking. I can barely talk.
Sweet and so brave. And, you know, I pray for a happy outcome immediately in this case.
Just hope that it happens very, very soon. It's just heartbreaking. And you know what's sad, Kim, is there are so many of these cases that are out there where things like this happen. It's not uncommon, and that's what's so frustrating. But you heard the pain in Julie Brown's voice as she talks about her missing brother, Johnny. So let's just keep our eyes open. If you're in the Myrtle Beach area, just keep on a lookout for Johnny Lamar Brown. Okay, Kimster, it is time now for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week. What is it, my dear?
Do, 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 do.
Yes.
Well, you know, Tricia, you know school's starting soon, and my youngest son is going to be a senior at the University of Oregon.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that?
No,
I know.
Can't.
I can't either. Time really flies. I started on Web Sleuths, I think he was a senior in high school, if I remember right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I might be wrong. Maybe he had just graduated. But anyway, needless to say, he's grown up very quickly.
Yes.
And I've shared this on Web Sleuths. I don't mind saying my son has Asperger's syndrome. So, mm-hmm. you know, my heart really went out to Julie. You know, Asperger's is different in that they, you know, kids with Asperger's can, you know, get along socially, learn mm-hmm. to get along socially later on. But still, it's scary when you have a child or, you know, or a loved one with special needs. It's always frightening because they don't always interpret things the same way we do.
Exactly.
So.
And I'm sure he had difficulties growing up with Asperger's, and it's been a tough road, but he has persevered, and he's going to graduate from college. That's wonderful.
Yes, it is.
That's
wonderful.
Great.
And, you know, I did not do this on purpose, but this week's cold case just happens to be about a college student who never mm-hmm. did come home.
Oh.
Web Sleuths member Frankie Hellas asked us to feature Kevin Hulse this week, and it could be Hulsey. You know, I don't always know the interpretation since I'm only reading them and not getting to hear the names, but it's Hulse, and I'm going to say Hulse for the rest of this show. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hulse was 22 years old at the time of his disappearance on May 4th, 2008. He went missing after last being seen at his family's vacation property in Bracy, Virginia, off Interstate 85. A neighbor confirmed seeing him come and go from the home on May 3rd, so we know he was there. On mm-hmm. May 4th, he called his parents, and he informed them he was already headed west with some friends, and he was calling to say goodbye, and he hasn't been seen since. His parents describe him as sounding extremely distraught and irrational. He did not take his clothes, he did not take his wallet, or his driver's license, money, or anything with him. According to his roommates, Kevin had been antisocial and withdrawn for the last 4 weeks before his disappearance, which was really out of character for him. Mm-hmm. He had stopped attending classes, and he had even stopped shaving. Ugh.
You know, it sounds like there was a mental issue going on here, and that is so tragic.
Yes, depression. I don't know exactly what, and I don't think they do either. He hadn't even shown up for work the 4 days prior to going missing, so this is really scary. Yet he was still seeing his family and even acted as his sister's sponsor during her Catholic confirmation in the week leading up to his disappearance. So he was still doing a lot of things that were, you know, kind of normal still.
Right.
Kevin is very close to his family, and he only had 2 more weeks of school at the University of Maryland to complete the semester.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other clue is there was a paddle boat, life vest, and nylon rope that was missing from the lake house residence. Neither Kevin nor the boat has ever been located, despite exhaustive searches of the lake and lake bottom by the county sheriff department. Around the time of his disappearance, there was an extensive week-long search for Kevin or his remains. Not finding Kevin during the search has left the family with a lot of hope that he is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Also, prior to his disappearance, a friend erased Kevin's computer hard drive per Kevin's instructions. However, the hard drive contents were recovered by the police department, so they do have them.
But Kevin's we don't know what it says.
No, and that information we got from our Web Sleuth member. I didn't see that on the internet. She wanted us to tell everybody that is to let us know all the clues. Also, I wanted to let you guys know that Kevin is 6'2". He was about 170 pounds when he went missing, with blue eyes. We do have a couple of pictures of him on Web Sleuth. But I wonder, did something drive Kevin over the edge? Did he really leave with friends? And if so, who are these friends? And have any of our listeners in the western part of the United States seen him, since he said he was headed out west? I don't know. I know I'm going to be looking for him. So, anyway, in order to get involved in helping find Kevin, please go to www.websleuth.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see one of our pictures of Kevin, along with a link to his thread. And on the thread, you'll also find a Facebook link, so you can share the information with your friends, and maybe someone out there has seen him and can tell his family that he is indeed still alive.
Oh,
you know, I was watching some disappeared shows where things like this have happened in other cases,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like they are, you know, have gone out and maybe, you know, committed suicide or something. However, they just stage it so they can
mm-hmm.
go missing, and they actually are alive somewhere else, and they left for whatever reason they thought they needed to leave. So he could very well be alive. I'm not losing any hope in that.
What a cute kid. I'm looking at his picture right now. Looks like a cute, fun kid. How sad. Let's hope he's still alive. I'm sorry, Kimster. Keep going.
Not a member of Web Sleuth. And you can't post on there about this case. So what do you do?
What do you do? Dun, dun, da, 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 theme from Jeopardy. What do? You register, because it's absolutely
free.
Free. Yes, it's free. And all we need from you is a real email address. That's it. And you can become a part of it. And like Kimster and I have always told you, even if you come on, after you hear somebody like Julie talk about her brother, you know she'll go on that thread. And just somebody saying, we're praying for you, or we're thinking of you, it means all the difference in the world. So when you think you can't make a difference, I'm here to tell you, you are absolutely wrong. You can make a huge difference just by acknowledging a certain case, and acknowledging that you're thinking of the family can mean all the difference in the world. Kimster, I want you to have a wonderful week. We'll be back next Sunday. We're working on some pretty interesting guests. So again, next week, it's going to be a very, very interesting show. Thank you, Kimster, for all your help. You're a doll.
And I want to also thank Steely Dan. He's been
I was just about to. It was my next, so you stole it from me. I was just about to say, and a special shout out to Steely Dan. He's helping us now organize, because Lord knows I need help organizing things, helping us organize some of the cold cases that we'll be talking about, or just any case that we're talking about. He's finding a whole bunch of them for us and getting us the information and putting it all together, and that's a lot of work. So, Steely Dan, thank you so much. See, Kim, I was going to do it, but we should both give him a shout-out, right?
That's right. I couldn't wait. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know. It's just bursting from you. That's okay. Steely Dan makes people burst. What can I say? know, he does. He has that effect on people. So, Kimster, thank you, my darling. Steely Dan, thank you. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. You guys are fantastic. Web Sleuths and Forums for Justice, thank you guys for participating in all you do. Join us next week for Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do so with common sense. Good night, everyone.